Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
The headlines this Monday, November 11th. Lebanon ceasefire efforts are underway. Pope Francis reminds the Fabrica of San Pietro that technology is both a gift and a responsibility, and the Pope insists that synodality is inseparable from ecumenism. In the Vatican, I'm Deborah Castellano-Lupa. As the war in the Holy Land continues, the Israeli foreign minister says that diplomatic efforts to broker a ceasefire in Lebanon are making progress. Let's learn more from Nathan Morley.
Gideon Saar said he thought there was some advancement, adding that Israel was working with the Americans on the issue. He said that Israel would agree to a truce only if promised that Hezbollah pulled its forces north of the Litani River. Israel also insists that Hezbollah will not rearm with new weapon systems. For their part, Hezbollah said that no official ceasefire plan has been given to the group. Israel has been conducting a massive ground offensive in Lebanon since late September, saying its aim is to demolish Hezbollah's military resources. Earlier, a volley of 50 rockets was fired from Lebanon into northern Israel, hurting three people. On Sunday, the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, took responsibility for the deadly attack targeting Hezbollah in September, in which thousands of handheld pagers exploded across Lebanon and Syria. It marks the first time an Israeli official has publicly acknowledged Israel's role in the attack, which sharply escalated cross-border hostilities between Israel and Lebanon, which have persisted since October. The operation, conducted in two waves on September the 17th and 18th, involved the detonation of thousands of explosive-laden pagers and hundreds of walkie-talkies across Lebanon and Syria, aiming at Hezbollah members. At least 42 people were killed and more than 3,400 people injured during the attack. During Sunday's cabinet meeting, Mr. Netanyahu also noted that he had spoken with the U.S. president-elect Donald Trump three times in the last 3 days. Elsewhere, the Palestinian president Mahmoud Abbas has condemned Israel's actions in Gaza and accused the country of rendering Gaza uninhabitable. Israel began a large-scale offensive against Hamas in Gaza in retribution for Hamas's assault on southern Israel last year. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
Meanwhile, each year on the 11th of November, Armistice Day is celebrated in countries across the world. Accompanied by the symbol of the resilient field flower, the poppy takes on a new meaning of hope each year as global warfare changes and expands and more lives are lost. Francesco Merlo tells us more.
At 11 a.m. on the 11th of November 1918, the armistice, an agreement to end the fighting of the First World War, opening up peace negotiations, was signed. Since then, the 11th of November marks Remembrance Day for all who have lost their lives in conflicts around the world. During the First World War, much of the conflict unfolded across Western Europe. There, the once beautiful countryside was torn apart until a striking field of red appeared, Flanders poppies. These flowers thrived and blossomed in their thousands and have become a symbol of resilience and remembrance for all who have died in war. A poppy this year could be dedicated to the soldiers across the world who are too young to be fighting. According to the United Nations, between 2005 and 2022, over 105,000 cases of child recruitment were documented. But on this day, we also acknowledge innocent civilians who have lost their lives in conflict and acts of terrorism. So this year, the poppy could be dedicated to the people of Ukraine, Palestine, Sudan, South Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. It could be a symbol for Myanmar, and especially the Rohingya people. The poppy could also go to the people of Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan, Cameroon, Nigeria, and Armenia. The poppy could be worn for the Yazidis, for the Tutsis, Cambodians, and Kurds. The list goes on. But the poppy this year is also for those who perish in the Mediterranean Sea as they seek safety across its waters. The poppy, standing high in impossible times, is a symbol of hope for all the populations across the globe who continue to suffer barbaric acts of warfare. I'm Francesca Merlo.
Turning to Pope Francis's day, the Holy Father on Monday welcomed to the Vatican the Holy Synod of the Malankara Mar Thoma Syrian Church, marking a historic first visit to Rome and confirming the good relations of the Catholic Church with this ancient Oriental Orthodox Church, which traces its origins back to the mission of the Apostle St. Thomas in India. In his address, the Holy Father hailed the progress of the ecumenical dialogue between the two churches, and he reiterated that synodality and ecumenism are essential for a stronger Christian witness. Lisa Zingarini reports.
La vostra chiesa si definisce giustamente una chiesa ponte tra Oriente e Occidente.
In his address, Pope Francis warmly welcomed the Holy Synod and extended his greetings to the Malankara faithful, expressing gratitude for their ecumenical role bridging Eastern and Western Christianity. Reflecting on the progress of relations between the two churches over the past decades, the Pope mentioned milestones such as the Second Vatican Council, where the Mar Thoma Church was represented, and recent official dialogues. He expressed hope that this step-by-step approach would lead one day to Eucharistic unity.
In questo cammino di dialogo vorrei mettere in risalto due prospettive, sinodalità e missione.
Pope Francis went on to highlight two key areas of collaboration, synodality and mission. He noted that synodality is intrinsic to the Mar Thoma Church and aligns with the Catholic Church's recent synod on synodality. The Pope recalled that one of the convictions expressed at the synod is that synodality is inseparable from ecumenism, for both are based on the one baptism we have received. On the topic of mission, Pope Francis remarked that synodality and ecumenism are essential for a stronger Christian witness. Mission is not only the goal of the ecumenical journey, it is also its means, the Pope stressed, expressing hope that, as the synod suggested, one day we can celebrate an ecumenical synod on evangelization. Pope Francis commended the Mar Thoma Church for its missionary spirit, which he said has much to contribute to this vision, and concluded by inviting all those present to join in reciting the Lord's Prayer. I am Lisa Zingarini.
The Pope also held various other audiences. He met with a delegation of the Catholic Philanthropy Network, where he told them to continue spreading Jesus' love through their efforts, as well as a group of Italian faithful from a diocese in northern Italy. But shortly thereafter, Pope Francis met with a delegation of the Vatican's Fabrica of San Pietro. For more than 500 years, this institution has been in charge of the preservation and restoration of St. Peter's Basilica. Founded in 1506 by Pope Julius II, the Fabrica has had the task of conserving the tomb of the Apostle Peter. And as new technologies develop, preserving the basilica's theologically and historically rich art and architecture, it has become even more doable. But in the Fabrica's meeting with Pope Francis, he challenged them to use the latest technologies to help them in their apostolic ministry without losing the sacredness of the space. Kelsey Gussie tells us more.
Pope Francis met with a centuries-old Vatican institution that is charged with the maintenance and preservation of St. Peter's Basilica, the Fabrica di San Pietro. The Pope challenged the members of the Fabrica to use the latest technologies to help in their apostolic ministry. He warned, however, that they must be used in a proper and constructive way, as they certainly hold potential but are also ambivalent. If not, it is as if the frame becomes more important than the picture. This rule is essential in the care and conservation of St. Peter's Basilica to ensure it is a living place of faith and history, Pope Francis said. For the millions of people who come from around the world to the Basilica, he says it must be a place where all feel welcome, those with faith and those seeking faith. The tomb of the Apostle Peter is at the heart of the Basilica. The Pope urged the Fabrica di San Pietro to carry out its restoration work in a way that respects the Basilica's sacredness. It should mimic the mission of the first Pope by accompanying pilgrims and supporting their journey. To accomplish this, Pope Francis offers three criteria to keep in mind: adopting a prayerful attitude, the gaze of faith, and the touch of the pilgrim. Beyond the physical work in the Basilica, the Pope also turned his attention to another work of art that takes place in this sacred place. He reflected on the role of confessors, expressing his wish there always be confessors available for those visiting St. Peter's. In this world so artistic and beautiful, the Pope said, there is also the art of personal communication, which includes that confessors must forgive everything. No matter who they are or what religion, the Pope urged, let no one leave without a blessing. I'm Kelsey Gussie.
Sticking with the story of St. Peter's Basilica, at 11:30 at the Holy See Press Office, there was the presentation of the project St. Peter's Basilica AI Enhanced Experience, which was realized by Microsoft and the Fabric of St. Peter in collaboration with the Fratelli Tutti Foundation and the digital mission of the outgoing Basilica. The speakers were Cardinal Mauro Gambetti and Mr. Brad Smith, the Vice Chair and President of Microsoft, who spoke to Vatican Radio's Fabio Grande. Let's listen.
I do believe that the opportunity to go through and see this exhibit does add to the spiritual experience of pilgrims coming to Rome. Just going through it myself yesterday, it gave me even more insight into the memory of St. Peter and his life and what it stood for. It enabled me to see how this place has changed over 20 centuries because it brings that history to life. People can actually look at it and see it. It allowed me to see parts of the basilica that one cannot see, say the Roman tombs underneath, or just standing on the floor of the basilica. One looks at the dome, but it's so high that one cannot see the painting, which is of the face of God. But with this exhibit, one can then go into this part, go literally as if one's going through the sky, you know, to see that up close and then look down back at the floor. I think it is something that materially adds to the whole experience of being here.
COP29 is beginning in Baku, Azerbaijan, and Vatican News spoke to expert Marielle Evers, chairholder of UNESCO Chair. Let's listen.
It's very important to know that water is a transmitter of climate change. So climate change is becoming visible and will be experienced by water issues, which is then either too little water or too much water, droughts, floods, and also changing of weather patterns that also matter. So seasonality is changing. And the monsoon influence areas, the dry season is getting drier and drier, and the wet season is getting wetter and wetter. That and fourth of the world population is living in the monsoon influenced area. So that really, really matters. So having a look at this and the interconnections and what is changing and what are the effects of these changes is very important to know that the water is influenced, of course, by climate. And on the other hand, water can do a lot for climate mitigation. Water is essential for healthy ecosystems. And healthy ecosystem can store carbon, a lot of carbon. It's in the forest, it's in the soil, it's in wetlands. And we need healthy ecosystems to maintain this functionality that these ecosystems can act as a sink of carbon, and not becoming a source for carbon release.
Are we still on time?
No, we are not in time. We really have to act, and we have come to actions.
That brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. Please stay with us because on Monday, the bishops from across the United States gathered in Baltimore, Maryland for their plenary assembly and to pray and dialogue about various topics facing the American church today. In the Vatican, I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.